from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. I'm glad to be back this week after taking a little vacation, celebrating my daughter who graduated from Grand Canyon University and my son who graduated from high school. But as I said, I'm glad to be back. A little later on in the show, we'll have one of the congressmen who spearheaded a piece of religious freedom legislation in the 90s and how it impacts Family Research Council today. Also, the National Rifle Association has a new president, and Tony Perkins had a chance to talk with him earlier this week. But first, for the first time in, well, as long as I can remember, members of the Senate may be forced to skip their August recess. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma is one of 16 senators who are asking Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to expedite floor consideration on funding bills and some of President Trump's nominees. He joined Tony Perkins on Tuesday to talk about that letter.
James, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Really a privilege to be with you again today.
Well, Senator, the Senate, despite the obstructionism, despite a lot of the delay tactics, you're actually setting some records when it comes to appointing and confirming some key judicial appointments.
That is correct. Yeah, one of the priorities that we've had is obviously we've had a slowdown in some other areas, and so we've shifted to things that we can make progress on, and one of those things is the circuit court. These are the first judges of appeal. So when they go to a federal district court, if they're appealed, they go to that circuit court. The next appeal will be the Supreme Court. So it's a very important court, this appeals court. We have 19 judges that we have confirmed now for the appeals court. At this point, 1/8 of all the judges in all the circuit courts in the country are Trump appointees, and we're not done. We're still to be able to work through this process. So that's in a year and a half for 1/8 of all the courts in the country to be Trump appointees. Makes a massive change in the courts, and we'll continue to be able to work through that process.
Now, Senator, that's quite significant when you think about some of these decisions that come from the circuit court level that have been, activist decisions that have advanced what I can only describe as a liberal legislative agenda that Congress wouldn't pass. They've turned to the courts to do. This will have lasting repercussions for that judicial activism.
No, it really will. One of the things that lasts longer than any president is law and judges. So if you can pass law as you go through the process, that outlasts the presidency. And then obviously if you put judges in place, that's a generational change that happens. And the judges that we're putting in place are not necessarily judges that are going to be biased one direction or another. We're looking for judges that will just interpret the law. That's the key thing. And what we found is in a lot of these cases where a judge gets frustrated that Congress hasn't passed something, and so they'll try to create law on the bench. That's the real problem. If they'll just look at the Constitution, follow the Constitution, we're not looking for you to have a bias other than a bias for the Constitution and for the law.
Right. And that's exactly it. I mean, you're looking for judges that will basically be the umpires, call the balls and strikes and say, this is constitutional, this is not. Not becoming an uber legislative body where you've got, 9 or in most cases 5 Supreme Court justices determining policy for the country, such as the redefinition of marriage.
Right. And that's a basic thing. If we're going to have any of those national conversations, we have a way to do that. That is either amending the Constitution and going through that long process, or by passing law on it if it's consistent with the Constitution. But all legislative powers resides in the people, and that is done through their elected officials, through the House and the Senate. So that's where it has to happen.
Senator James Lankford, a number of your colleagues have, along these same lines, trying to get this backlog of nominations done, calling upon the majority leader, Senator McConnell, to forego the August break to dig in and get this stuff done, because no one knows what the outcome of this fall's election will bring when it comes to the makeup of the Senate.
Yeah, that is correct. And one of the primary things that we have to get done is we have to get appropriations done. We can't have another omnibus. There have been 18 of the last 20 years that there's been an omnibus spending bill, and we have got to be able to get through the nominations. And while the speed of nominations has picked up in the last couple of months as we've applied more pressure, we've got to be able to finish this out and get President Trump his staff, which he still needs all these individual people to be able to get on board and get nominated, and we need to get through judges. We've got about 67 judges right now in the queue that we've got to work our way through. And so my statement hasn't been that we just cancel August to say we canceled August. My statement is there's 1 month out of the year, out of the 12 months of the year, there's only 1 month that we're not in session all month. That's August. I'm recommending if we can't get these nominations done and we can't get appropriations done, we work in D.C. through August as well to be able to make sure that we actually get this done. It's that important for the country.
I think that's a very important distinction. There's no reason just to be in D.C. if you're not getting this stuff done. I think this is one of the issues, and I know you've heard it as you go back to one of the reddest states in the nation, is that people want to see the agenda that President Trump brought in, the conservatives brought in. They want to see it accomplished, and they want to see people fighting for it, in the United States Congress.
Yep, and as well they should, because that's what they've asked us to do. When we were elected to do it, we were elected to get things done. Obviously, the Senate is set up and designed, and I believe rightfully so, that all opinions in the country are heard in the Senate, but that doesn't mean the Senate can't do anything. It's got to be able to move, especially on things like nominations and appropriations. We finished the tax bill. That was an enormous gain for the tax bill. We've got a transformation that's happening in the judiciary, whether that be Neil Gorsuch in the Supreme Court and now the Circuit Court and a large number of district court individuals. So there have been a lot of accomplishments we have been able to get done. It just takes a long time to do it. And my challenge is, if it's not getting done and we're running out of time, let's stay here through August as well. And I would tell you, August is a beneficial time for me to be back in Oklahoma meeting with as many people, as many counties as I possibly can. We have 77 counties across the state, and for me to be able to cover it, it takes a lot of time to be able to do that. And I'm grateful to do that during the August time period. But if it causes us to get more judges and to be able to get legislation done and appropriations done, then let's be here in August and get it done.
Yeah, I know Oklahoma, that's a lot of pickup time in the pickup truck driving across the dusty roads of plains of Oklahoma. I want to transition quickly to get your thoughts. You and I, a few years ago, were a part of a delegation that went to Israel. I know you're supportive of Israel. Yesterday, with the dedication of the embassy, your thoughts on where this might lead in terms of a managed peace in the Middle East?
Yeah, I would hope that it does lead towards a managed peace. There are some people that are falsely saying that moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem hurts the peace process. I think it actually helps the peace process. It puts the marker up to everyone that we're going to recognize what is. If you're going to visit with Benjamin Netanyahu in his office is in Jerusalem. If you're going to visit with the members of the Knesset in their legislative branch, it's in Jerusalem. If you're going to visit with their judiciary, they're in Jerusalem. It's not in Tel Aviv. That is the capital of Israel. So we should have our embassy at that spot. So that's been a no-brainer moment. The next thing has got to be, though, is to be able to establish, okay, now that this has been done, finally after 70 years of recognizing what everyone can see obvious with their eyes, that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, we still have to be able to work through the process to be able to get to a peace. There have been dozens of individuals that have been killed as they're rushing the fence and trying to illegally cross the border for all sorts of nefarious purposes out of Gaza over the last couple of days. Now, we've not seen that in the West Bank area. But in Gaza, that's been a big issue as Hamas continues to be able to foment violence in that area.
So, Senator, I mean, we've seen the media coverage in the last 36 hours, you know, playing up on that violence. And it is tragic. I mean, any loss of life is tragic.
It is.
I've been there, right there on the border with Gaza. But does not the leadership of Hamas of the Gaza Strip, do they not have a responsibility to govern their people and say, hey, don't do this? We're not seeing those messages come out. And in fact, for all we know, they're encouraging it and inspiring it.
It does appear that Hamas is actually inspiring youths of that area to try to rush the fence and to literally use them as humans that they're throwing away their life for some sort of PR purposes. Hamas has become so vile to even the people in the area that the Palestinian Authority that handles the West Bank is cutting off funding to Hamas to even say to the Palestinian Authority, Hamas is so vile that they're not going to allow them to be able to get funding. And that is a major transition that is occurring as well. So Hamas is becoming more and more isolated in the region by other nations in the region like Egypt and by Saudi Arabia and by the Palestinian Authority. We need to continue to advance that to be able to say, let's protect and honor the lives of those Palestinians that live in the Gaza Strip, because they also live under a ruthless dictatorship that foments terrorism.
Well, I appreciate all that you have done on that issue. I know you've been working to ensure that Israel is treated fairly, and in fact, that our tax dollars going to the Palestinian Authority are not used to foment hatred and that violence against Israel and the United States. Are we making progress on that front?
We are actually. UN Ambassador Haley has been a terrific asset to be able to just address this basic part of the peace process, that is how we handle American tax dollars. Americans are involved in trying to help with the peace process and have been for decades. We help both the Israelis and we help the Palestinians. We do humanitarian work. We do education work. We do work for healthcare, all of those things in the region. And we've been very engaged with the Palestinians and with the Israelis, and we should lean in and do that. We're a moral leader in the world. We need to act like a moral leader in the world in the way that we handle all people. But we've also got to say, if this creates an environment that generation after generation, that people have this kind of violence, and if it creates an environment generation after generation that actually hurts the peace process than helps it,
yeah,
we should evaluate that and try to turn that around. And that's what Ambassador Haley, other pieces of legislation that we're working on, the appropriations process to hold some accountability to how our dollars are spent.
All right. Senator James Lankford, thank you for taking time to step off the Senate floor to talk with us.
Glad to be able to do it, Tony. Take care.
If you want to find out more about Senator Lankford, head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the newest leader of the NRA.
Are you a pastor? Do you know a pastor? We want to invite pastors to Family Research Council's Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Briefing on May 23rd through 25th in Washington, D.C. Pastors will hear from John Bevere, Michelle Bachman, Josh McDowell, Kay Arthur, Todd Starnes, congressional leaders, and others who will inform, inspire, and equip them to engage on issues relevant to today's culture. For more information and to register, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit watchmanpastors.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. A couple of weeks ago, the National Rifle Association held their annual meeting in Dallas, and much to the surprise of at least one of their members, the sitting president of the organization was stepping down. That member was retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and he is now the president of the NRA. Here's Tony Perkins.
Colonel North, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony. Semper Fi, Marine.
Semper Fi. I'm trying to pull the general here into the to the studio for the conversation, but you know, I think once I introduced you as a Marine, I think he's running away
probably,
somewhere. But
yeah.
Maybe we can drag him in. We'll hog time and drag him in.
He may be in the head.
I mean, it's not like you needed something else to do. But the National Rifle Association just elected you as their president. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, it was a surprise. When I got down to Dallas for the annual meeting, they pulled me aside and said, Pete Brownell, who's been the president for the last year, cannot stand for re-election. He's got family and business issues that are being very seriously affected by this nationwide, very well-organized boycott, divest, and sanction program that has been launched against the NRA. Very much like, by the way, what's happened to Israel. I've been listening to your conversations about what's going on in Israel today, and it's not a whole lot different. It's a little bit less violent, but the kind of things that have been perpetrated against the NRA ever since the travesty of what happened in Florida on Valentine's Day is the harassment, the threats, the vandalism, the nonstop propaganda gin that's come out in the mainstream media has all adversely affected a number of people. It's not affected the membership of the NRA nearly as much as they intended. I mean, I've kind of watched the media ever since I was down in Dallas, and they're saying the NRA is on its heels, and people are flocking out of the NRA. The NRA has never had more members since it was organized in 1871. It's taken us since 1871 to get to 6 million members, and my goal is to get another million, because if indeed we do have 100 million firearms owners in America, they need to know that the NRA is not just teaching safety and how to properly handle a firearm and the kinds of things that you need. The original purpose of the NRA was to teach those kinds of things in the aftermath of the Civil War. And because people had learned, you know, an awful lot of the folks called into the military didn't know how to shoot. And so the NRA was organized in 1871 for that purpose and to defend the Second Amendment. So I look at what's happened, Tony, and I say to myself, I'm now almost 75 years old. I've never heard a Supreme Court justice, active or retired, urge the repeal of the Second Amendment. We have members of Congress who want to introduce legislation to that effect. That's never happened before. And so when you look at those kinds of things happening and this BDS, this boycott, divest, and sanction the NRA, I look at what the Israelis are going through right now because of propaganda and that and the kinds of things you were just talking about on your show, I say to myself, we need somebody who knows what's going on, and I took this job because I do, and furthermore, I love a good fight. And this is going to be a fight, and we're going to double our size at some point here in the not-too-distant future, and it's going to send a message to the George Soros crowd, the Bloomberg crowd, those folks who are using all the instruments of their power in the banks. And they've got hackers out there that are hacking into phone systems. And my phone went blank within an hour of the press release on Monday last week saying that I was the next president of the NRA. That's how fast it happened.
Wow. So, well, speaking of fights, Colonel, I just had someone join us here in the studio that outranks both of us, but I know we could take him easily.
Yeah, hey, you know, your phone went blank because of 75 years old. You don't know how to use it, aside from the fact that you're a Marine.
Hey, you know, it's got one button that says call, and I called you as soon as I could, but you were in Israel, see? So, and I'm kind of concerned that you're here now. Because right now you should be in Israel, because you know what's going on out there. I mean, it's what's happening. You know, if you look at the cultural depravity that's occurring in our country right now and globally, look at the European Union is sanctimoniously banging at the gates of Israel, just like Hamas and Hezbollah, both of which are wholly owned subsidiaries of the government in Tehran. I mean, and yet you don't see that kind of thing in the headlines. I mean, how did this whole thing get ginned up down in Gaza? It got ginned up in the mosques and with money being sent to Gaza by the Iranians. And I look at this kind of thing happen, General, and I say to myself, thank God we've got Nikki Haley at the United Nations.
I agree.
Colonel, and I'll bring the general in on this as well, when you make reference to what's happening in Israel, you see the BDS movement, you see the resist axis there in the Middle East where they're resisting. But we see very similar things here, and I think you're right to draw a parallel to the NRA. The left here has become militant in taking away constitutional rights.
Well, look, these are very serious threats. I mean, they describe themselves as activists. I've carried with me ever since it came out. I've got the Washington Compost of April 22nd, and the headline reads, "Activists Target NRA Lobbyist's Home, Wife's Store in Alexandria." The last time I checked, vandalism is against the law. Hacking into people's computers is against the law. Hacking into bank accounts is against the law. Threatening people over the telephone is against the law. Swatting, which is a process of calling false police reports in to have the SWAT team show up in the middle of the night at an NRA member or a board member or an NRA official, those are all against the law. It's not just a matter of a political
thing. Let me stop you and say one thing as we're going into the break here. Don't you find it amusing that all these anti-gun people, the first people they call are cops that are armed?
Yeah.
When there's a problem?
In schools, unfortunately, in Parkland, they didn't do their job.
If you want to find out more about Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North or the NRA, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with an important announcement concerning religious freedom.
Hello. Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the appointment of Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom as its newest commissioner. Joining Tony to talk about the importance of the commission is a former congressman who spearheaded the legislation that resulted in this commission, Congressman Frank Wolf.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us here today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be with you. Thank you very much.
Well, privileged to have the opportunity to serve on the commission that was created by the law that you spearheaded back in 1998. And I want to take a little bit of time to talk about the vision for that, why that law was brought forth, passed out of both houses, signed by President Bill Clinton. What was the motivator 20 years ago to bring this to the forefront of discussion in the Congress?
Well, several things. President Reagan said that the words in the Constitution and the words in the Declaration of Independence were a covenant, not only with the people in Philadelphia, you know, in 1776 and 1787 when the Constitution was ratified, but a covenant with the entire world. And Reagan sort of was the beginning. The other thing, many of the Jewish groups really did a great job. If you remember Jackson Vanik, with regard to immigration, they spoke out and they pushed and pushed and pushed. Then I took a trip. I took a trip to Ethiopia during the famine in 1984. And, you know, you had the communist government, Mengistu, and we saw people die. I got waylaid in a camp up in Alamata, a camp run by World Vision, and on one side was Mother Teresa's camp. That was a life-changing experience. Then in 85, I went to Romania with former Congressman Tony Hall, and we saw people who were persecuted. We talked to people who told us their husband was in jail, their son was in jail, and that was one of the Ceausescu. It was darker in Bucharest than any place around the world. And so I sort of came out of that. And then Chris Smith and I went to China in the early 90s. We visited the last gulag. So it kind of came out of that. And then lastly, you had people, giants, like Chuck Colson, Don Argue from the National Association of Evangelicals, and there was a gathering in the Mayflower in 1997, I guess it was. Yeah, Chuck Colson, Cardinal McCarrick, Richard Land, Don Argue, and they all came together. And Michael Horowitz, I don't know if you know Michael, but he was one of the ones that helped draft this. And it all kind of came together. And then this was during the Clinton administration. You may or may not recall, but the Clinton administration opposed the bill, and Secretary of State gave a statement against it. Madeleine Albright gave a speech at a Catholic university against it. The business community came out against it. Some of the human rights groups came out against it. Some of the church groups, I think the National Council of Churches, opposed it. So we passed it in the House, got it over in the Senate, and on the last day, it was being blocked, and Dan Coates was in my freshman class as a freshman member. He's now director of national intelligence. He saved the bill and got it over, and we stayed that evening as unanimous consent, took the Senate language, and we passed it.
So we're 20 years into the law, the commission, the ambassador at large for religious freedom, which the act created. Is it functioning as it was envisioned? Are we seeing religious freedom protected, or has it been underutilized as a tool to promote religious freedom?
I think it's been underutilized. Let me just say, I am so grateful for Senator McConnell appointing you. I think you can, you know, I've always said personnel is policy. You put the right people in, and you can, with the right, you can make things happen. And it's, you know, what you've done with Miriam Abraham, I was at that event, I remember, about 2 or 3 years ago, and I know you really care. So you can make a tremendous difference. The needs are so great. I mean, China, Catholics are being persecuted, Protestants are being persecuted, Uyghur children are being taken away, put into detention camps. Pakistan, Christian woman Asia Bibi's been in jail for 8 years under a blasphemy conviction for taking a drink of water out of a cup. So there's so much that you can do. Also, you're with an organization. You care, your organization cares, so you have a bigger voice than perhaps anybody else. I mean, you can really do a big difference. I think you guys, with the people that are filling these spots, and with your appointment, I hope the next couple are as good as you are that are waiting to come out. I think you guys can shake this thing up. And you're not afraid to speak out. I mean, you will say whatever you think. And this is the Lord's work. What they're doing to Tibetan Buddhists is, I mean, they've turned Lhasa into a dirty Chinese city. I mean, they're stripping 140 Tibetan monks and nuns have poured kerosene on their bodies in protest of the Chinese government. Did you see the story the other day? A guy that works for Marriott, 50 years old, does a little tweet about China and to Tibet. Marriott fired him. Nobody's saying anything about the guy. So I think you guys are poised with this commission, with you and people like you, with Ambassador Brownback, with Secretary of State Pompeo, and with the Trump-Pence people, I think you guys can shake this thing up and really make a big difference.
And it will have so many byproducts to religious freedom. I mean, from a national security standpoint, from an economic standpoint, but of course, fundamentally, it's a human right issue of that freedom to choose. Congressman, we're again up against a break, but I want to thank you for your vision and for your continued dogged determination to protect to speak for the voiceless and protect those in minority statuses around the world. So we are grateful for the leadership you've provided.
Thank you, and thank FRC. You guys do a great job.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.